The next talk will be from Michael Meeks, a developer from SUSE and Noble, and he is also involved in the LibreOffice project and in the Document Foundation. He is in the board of directors. Very hard job.
Oh, very, very hot. Yeah.
Okay, and he's talking about LibreOffice collaborating tool or collaborating version, and we are beginning to start with this version, and he's showing how, I think, how we could work in collaboration two or three people and on one document.
Something like that. Thank you, Andreas. That's great. I'm also talking about getting involved with LibreOffice and hacking with us, a collaboration in two senses. Collaborating with us and also collaborating with other people interactively. So there you go. Cool, thank you. So this is what I'm going to say, I guess. Two different kinds of collaboration, but in the same talk. Two for the price of one. So everyone wants to do more than email. I'm sure if you came to Svante's talk, you heard the same rant. You know, people email documents, and there are 15 versions in your sent folder alone, and, you know, they come from other people, they have to be merged, it's a real pain, and, so it sucks. So we need to do something about it. But there are other things that suck as well. So setting up servers is really, really unpleasant to do. It's easy for us, competent people, you know, we just go and hire a co-location facility, or we have one already, you know, we have a hosted virtual machine somewhere, and we SSH into it, and we dump stuff on it, and it opens ports, and we tunnel it through the firewall, and suddenly we have our own collaboration experience. Isn't that brilliant? The problem is, most people aren't us. They are incapable of doing even their shoelaces up without help. So, but usually they have instant messaging working already. You know, they use their AOL messenger or something, and so why don't we use that as a great way to bootstrap communication? So, everyone has IM working, even the most surprising people. And there's a thing called the telepathy framework that abstracts this and provides nice APIs to use for any generic IM type thing. So that goes from Jabber, which I guess is what it's built around, XMPP, and it also will use, at the most banal level, Bonjour or Avahi, and discover people on your local network and create a tunnel just across your LAN. But of course, GADU and ICQ and all of these other things, luckily hidden away, and we don't have to care for them. So the idea then basically is to use messages, instant messaging messages for editing, and file transfer for bulk setup of new files and so on. So that's the plan. But there's a problem in the plan, and the problem is that the software doesn't quite look like it ought to look. This is a picture of beautiful software, in case you didn't notice it. It doesn't have the curves. It's more sort of brute architecture. But, you know, you have all of these separate pieces. So there's a nice controller that's nicely separated from a model, and there's a nice view. There's probably another way we can separate all this code as well. But, you know, this is the ideal. And if you find an application, you know, that looks like that, you know, tell me. And so, you know, when you have this beautiful model, all sorts of things are possible. So, you know, one perhaps lame way to do it is to have the model, somewhere else. Might work for some kinds of model. And, you know, send over the network control commands and get your view updated in some way. I guess that could work. Another typical way is to have two models and try and keep them in sync. When I say two, I mean more than one, you know. It could be any number. But then you end up with these problems that, you know, you can both change the same thing at the same time. And who wins? And not only who wins, but it may not matter who wins at either side, but you've really got to agree on who won. You know, it's no use him winning over here and her winning over here, which is where the problem coming across these lines as they cross, basically. How do you deal with that? So, either way, this is in the world where there is a nice, consistent structure to your application and your model, and it's cleanly split. LibreOffice problem is a bit different. The code structure is not quite as elegant as you might hope under the bonnet. I mean, it's excessively functional. You know, it works really well. But in terms of design, you know, there's 25 years of different design patterns by a team of a large number of people applied to the code base. So depending on which bit of the code you look at, it's either quite good or really not very good. And unfortunately, the bits of code use each other. So in some cases, let me give you a random example. Control objects. So you can put a button inside your Word Writer document. But Writer really struggles with a model view concept. You can get multiple views, but the layout of the whole page is really tied to one view. And so it's not clear that another view with slightly different properties would... I mean, you just can't cope with it at the moment. So, and controls present a particular problem in here. So abstracting this is really rather nasty. And it just doesn't work at the moment. So you end up with a single view, and you get to like it. So, yeah, I worked on a piece of software recently, untangling it, and it had a single class called Model View Controller. Which was everything, all in one, you know? I mean, obviously they read the book, you know, that they should have these things, and they thought they'd shove them all in one class, which is great. So anyhow, it now has at least a model and a view, though the controller's not separate. So how do we go from here to a version that allows collaborative editing? How can we even start to move towards that when we have, you know, 8+ million lines of code? So here's what I'm at least planning to do, and you know we have a prototype and it's being worked on. The first thing to do is to make some compromises. So the first compromise is to say that ordering is king. It doesn't actually matter what you do to the document. You know, if the user presses K and half of the page disappears, that's fine. That's fine, as long as it happens the same everywhere. Right? It doesn't matter what you do, because the user will soon learn not to press K when half their document disappears, right? You know, so you have them on your side, and as long as everyone's document is disappearing, that's the main thing. So we need to always do everything, everywhere, in the same order on every client. That's the simplifying criteria here. Now, if you came to Svante's talk earlier, which was full of composable operations and, you know, wonderful mathematical models of doing this, it all sounded very good and very abstract and could be used in asynchronous ways to do wonderful things. There's only one problem, which is that when you have conflicting operations, you have to decide which one wins, and ordering is still a problem there. If you look at Google Wave and Apache Wave, I'm sorry, it basically has this problem too. And so all of these composable operations, which are all designed to be very powerful, end up in a single server being ordered. So basically, other people have this problem too. So the second point is similar to the first one, which is that interactive conflicts can be dealt with by users as long as they appear in reasonable time. You know, so you're editing and someone else is editing, and everybody fails in the same way. You know, they get the wrong answer, and then they can go and fight again and see who wins next time, you know, whether the answer is right or wrong. But again, you have to be sure that you're seeing the same thing. It's no good for her to think she's won and him to think he's won, and then they save the documents and the master won, you know, which got the right answer. Particularly because these changes can introduce trickle-down, knock-on impacts as well, particularly in spreadsheet cases if you have conflicts. So here's the same design again, but with a slight teasing out. So instead of the controller talking to the model directly, we try and do this cut sort of in here. So the controller instead talks to an instant messaging bus. So as you type, none of what you type goes into your Office suite. It all goes out to your instant messenger. So while you can't see it, it's disappearing over the wire. And that's fine. That's it. That's the story. Instead of typing into your application, you type into the instant messenger. It's kind of cool. But whatever comes back from the instant messenger, you apply in the order that it comes to you. So that's a very simple model. And it has the benefit that the instant messaging server itself enforces the ordering. So there is a strong ordering coming back from all of those people that are talking to this guy And that's really nice because that solves the problem for us. So there are a number of transports that solve that nicely out of the box. XMPP chat rooms provide this guarantee. And there is a huge infrastructure out there already that someone else is paying for, in this case Google or whoever, Jabber.org or whatever, that we don't have to buy or provide in any way. It's just there. So, okay, this says what I just said. So sometimes there's a potential latency issue there. You type into your cell, you hit enter, and it takes a little while to come back, right? The edit might not appear. However, in the intervening time, the application isn't blocked. It isn't sitting there not rendering anything. It just hasn't got your edit yet, which is fine. It's just sitting around, not doing much. So you can be moving around and entering edits elsewhere, and they will, of course, show up in due course as well. But at least it's not blocking the user from continuing, entering their huge column of numbers that they want to fill out. So, there are some downsides to this approach, but at the end of the day, the implementation is feasible in linear time, which is quite a useful, property to some of this stuff. And I think we can take it further in the future. It can be improved. Demo, it says. Oh, well, we should have a demo. So over here we have a spreadsheet. Hopefully it's visible. And we can, do some fun things. So Jim, 2.5. I don't know. He's a tall bloke. Bill, 1.6. He's less tall. Ted, 0.7, something like this. We can create some of these things and drop a little graph in of, heights and so on. And, So this is all good. So, so far, nothing particularly interesting. And part of the reason is that this is really quite a prototype. So, let's put a note in here that... we think, is Ted really this tall? Something like this. So, you can do this sort of stuff, that's fine. So, there's a nasty hack built in that when I type save me into a cell, I end up with another document here called lego-guf-tumpf.ods. Good, isn't it? I told you it was a prototype, did I mention that? Yeah, okay, good. So now we have two of these, which is fun, because now we can type, stuff in. Oh, gosh, I'm going to have to shrink this one too. Let's try that. Yeah, so, and it appears on both sides. Or we can decide, in fact, actually he's 1.2 tall, and both of these graphs are, let's make him very tall. Let's make him 5, because then you might see the change more vigorously, and we can hide the comment. And we've almost exhausted the list of operations that can be shared at this point. On the console, you can see there's some horrendous debug here parsing these things as they start going across the wire. So, setting this thing to 1.2, loading and saving the files, typing into it, and so on. And in fact, everything that I've typed way before we started collaborating is being serialized in that way. So actually in this mode, those edits are going via this bus that isn't there. So even with one user, it's just talking back to itself, which has some interesting properties. So, what else can we do? Oh, we can rename the sheet. Foobar. And we got foobar both sides. So that's the demo. It's pretty banal. There's a lot more work to be done, though. Teasing this thing apart and vectoring these operations out and making sure the user interface uses those operations instead of nailing things directly into the model itself, which is what it likes to do. So we really have to be pulling that controller out. But hey, so there we go. Incidentally, do heckle me or, discourage me or whatever you want to do as we go along. So the Star Trek future. So say we have this working, which, of course, is the direction we're going in. And what else could we do with it? Well, there are some things that are actually quite easy to do. So one thing is that autosave and recovery is a disaster area from any perspective you want to imagine. It seems ridiculous that this computer that is mostly idle, most of the time between your key presses, it is doing absolutely nothing at great speed. There is a gigahertz processor throttled down to only 500 megahertz. And it's refreshing all its DRAM all the time like this and, fiddling with the disk inevitably. And yet, somehow your data is lost when the application crashes or you foolishly do something bad to it, which hopefully is more likely. So why is that? Well, one thing that we can do is we can start... and saving is also a lame thing to do. I don't know if you've seen the Mac the Mac now has check-in instead of save, which is quite amusing. I don't know if you've played with the Mac Office, but there you go. What a fun world it is. But really, what we need to be doing is serializing the state while people are typing, it seems to me, so that you can be sure that everything is there and is actually on the oxide or the flash or whatever it is as you type it. That creates some problems because our file format is not really set up for that. It's a zip file and there's not really space in it. But it seems to me that we could grow the zip file in clever ways and journal things inside there or save it to your autosave directory such that you never lose any data again. Short of taking a gun to your hard disk or whatever. You know, it's actually there and you can't lose it. So that would be nice. That's one trivial to implement use case that unfortunately needs the very difficult abstraction doing first. So after you've done that, which is the low-hanging fruit, there's all of this, well, why can't you use it for undo and redo? And in theory, you can do that. It's not ideal for it, but it can be done. So you'll notice these operations are not really reversible. So if you, again, listen to Svante's talk, his operations all have to be reversible so that you can remove them after they've been inserted. And it's not clear that all of ours are easy to represent in that way. Undo, redo is perhaps not so easy, but do, you know, usable. And then there's wacky things. I personally think you need to smoke quite a bit of crack before you get into the world of standardizing these for change tracking and dealing with your document as an abstract set of changes for all time. And, when you're there, you might as well be starting to put the revision control system and, you know, all of the history of the document and who was merged with it in the file as well. And, you know, you reinvented revision control and at a very granular level and so on. Which seems like a lot of effort to me. But there you go. It may be possible. So are there any questions on that? Because the next bit of the talk is totally unrelated. Go on, heckle me. Daniel, you want to heckle me? Go on. No? This is good. It's going to be over soon. I can go and relax. I love it. Brilliant. Okay, well, let's look at development then instead. Is that all right, Andreas? Yeah? I like to show this graph a lot because people claim it's all made up. It may all be made up, but we use standard tools to produce it so people who claim that can go and produce it themselves and see that it is so. Anyhow, the encouraging thing is we get loads of people contributing and it's gone up. The last month, Google Summer of Code was kind to us. All those people submitting patches. So, yeah, pleasing. There's a big team you can be involved with. And if you're here, you're German, you have a special ministry to the code. You know, you have a skill that is rare in our community. You know, you're technically astute because you're here, you know, and you're able to speak German because you're at a German conference, probably, in Germany. And, we have a big German code comment problem, really quite big. 32,000 strings to go or so. Actually, it's a bit down from that. I think it's probably about 29 now. I haven't looked at the numbers in recent times. But some of our maintainers, the writer maintainer, for example, would beg you. If he were here, he would be asking for you to come and help because some of the writer code comments are really not very clear. And they're all in German anyway. So, and the code is not obvious, which is why we want to read the comment in the first place. And Google Translate only goes so far, you know. So, yeah, and there's some great people there have been helping out reducing. In fact, Tim, where is he? Aha, his name is on the thing there. Look, you know, this, I'm not supposed to do that, am I? Ugh. And he never saw again. Waving at the back there. The other thing is there's a lot of other things to work on. We have an Easy Hacks page, which is pretty cool. You can go there and there's a whole load of simple tasks, you know. Tasks, in some cases, that require no programming skill at all. So German Common Translation is pretty much that. But there are others that are really simple, so you can get involved in the project and do something useful that's appreciated without needing a vast skill set. Yeah, and you know you can help grow in the project. So lots of fun things. There are some more difficult things there as well, of course. And some of the things that we do have just quite a big impact across the project. So the tile page rendering, for example, ripping out the rendering core of LibreOffice so that it can be reused easily, is extremely useful for our Android port and our online port and, for the iPhone too. You know, we need to reuse this functionality in lots of places. So It has a multiplied effect. You know, it accelerates these things. Memory reduction, again, you know, saving memory seems like a generally good thing to do, but in a small device, it's really, really important, obviously. In the online office suite, where you've got 400 people using, you know, your LibreOffice, if you can save them, you know, a megabyte, which is relatively feasible saving, actually, without a huge amount of work, then, yeah, that's 400 meg you saved. You know, it's starting to become reasonably significant on a server. So, I don't know, just here, we managed to duplicate the string forward slash 60,000 times at startup in memory, something like that, you know? So, you know, just the one slash. That seems suboptimal to me. You know, it would be nice to have someone to look at that dump of stupid string allocations and work out what is going on and where to stick one constant in, you know, the one-line patch that saves lots of memory. So, things like that. But again, very useful across the board. And, yeah, so, of course, collaborative editing is something that everyone wants. Fast startup, you know, you can never be too fast, can you? Yeah, things like Cortex. Making our Mac port better has a really nice effect on the iPhone. So, you know, you can't run on the iPhone with the old AtSUI rendering APIs. So there's some work being done there that would be great, you know, great for people to get involved in if they have Macs and like that sort of thing. So, lots of cool things to hack on. The other thing is that we have Google Summer Code students who love encouragement. And, you know, it's not explicitly part of their remit, but I would like these guys to be encouraging other people to work with them and mentoring people because, well, that's all good stuff. So, for example, there is a smartphone remote control thing here. A guy is making an Android app, so I can stand on this side and, you know, drain my battery actively, and I can see the next slide, you know, antisocially staring at my phone, like the people you find walking down the street that aren't looking where they're going, you know, and all that sort of thing. Which is good, but he's going to make a nice protocol there for, you know, next slide, previous slide, all this sort of stuff. And that would be cool to work with him, obviously. But hey, we could plug that little piece of code into our collaboration framework, and we've suddenly got follow me slideshows, you know? So join the chat room, and there's a slideshow, and here it is, and, you know, as I press the button, we go through the slideshow. You know, there's lots of really simple, quite compelling features that we can create like that just by gluing different bits of this picture together. So it's exciting. Unit tests. This is a guy working on unit tests. We're doing more and more unit testing, which helps improve code quality. If you have a feature that routinely breaks in LibreOffice that you really need to work, what better way than write a unit test? And then you can be sure that it will work forever, you know? We will have to fix it when we break it. So that's cool. There's a Microsoft publisher filter, but all of these guys would love help, you know? They're doing good work, particularly the publisher guy's doing some excellent work. But, you know, it's good to have more people involved. We have a beautiful grammar checker thing. There's a grammar confusion at the moment, but it's all going to be sorted out, I hope. And Daniel's doing some work improving that. And, yeah, lots of good things. And Matush is working on collaborative editing with me, which is good fun. So we're optimistic. He's got some nice graphics there. You know, avatars and lists of contacts and so on, coming along nicely. So what are the conclusions? Well, collaboration is fun. There's a lot more work needed to tease apart the core and separate the controller from the rest of the monster. You know, so anything that changes the model needs to get vectored out. And we have quite a lot of that in place. We have some of the interfaces there, but they need using everywhere. And there's a degree of code auditing and, you know, carefulness that's needed there. There's a blog you can go and read about a bit of that and the Hackfest where we got it working. And, yeah, there's lots of easy reapplications of that once it's done, which is good. And LibreOffice is improving rapidly. You know, it's a fun place to hack. It's good to get involved. And the small changes that you make here, you know, follow me slideshows, whatever, you know, it's maybe 5 days of work when this Android thing is done for a very beginner person. But, you know, that's used by millions of people. You'll think, what a cool feature. You know, so a real impact actually in the marketplace out there. So, yeah, strike your blow for freedom here. And thanks for your help and support. Yeah. And get involved. So that's my talk. Thank you very much.
Some questions?
Ah, Google. Are you with Google, or do you just wear the T-shirt?
Just wear the T-shirt.
Yeah, just wear the T-shirt. That's a good T-shirt. I love it.
From last year. Will these slides be online somewhere for the URLs? Or
absolutely,
something?
Yeah, okay, cool. Completely. Yeah, if you go to my blog, if you Google for Michael Meeks, you'll probably find me.
You have to send him them to us, to the Linux Tower.
Oh, I do?
Yeah.
You have to.
Oh.
To do. All your slides.
Oh, yeah, the good thing about Linux Talk is that previously when you go to conferences, they would say, 3 months in advance, they would say, we need your slides so we can print them out, you know? I used to go to conferences, and literally there would be boxes full of paper like this and handouts. And the reality was that none of it was written 3 months in advance. You know, the demos didn't work, the software wasn't there. And, you know, in the modern world, it gets done, you know, closer and closer to the actual talk. So
we will get it only a day or 3 days or a week later.
Or so later, yeah, I know. So that's good. You know, yeah, absolutely. So it'll certainly be on the website, whatever Andreas can come up with. Yeah.
It will be in the near to the talk on the website.
And everything on my blog's CC0, so steal it and laugh at it or whatever, or you know, reuse it everywhere else. So yeah, it's all good. Cool. Well, that was a great question. That was an easy one. Come on, someone must have a difficult question, like, why do you suck so much? You know, or whatever, or, you know, the stones, throw the stoning. You know, where else? No?
No one?
Aha,
no question.
Excellent, good man. Here we go. I love it, I love it.
Give a ding, 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 ding,
ding. Okay, a complicated one. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the integration of IBM Symfony in OpenOffice at these days? Will there be...
Yeah, let me sit down for this one.
Did LibreOffice in any way get input from there too? Or?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So in order for us to take code from there, we need to have a license environment that allows that. And in order to do that, we need to get license statements from all of our contributors to allow that. So the license that we're choosing to move to is the MPL v2, the Mozilla Public License v2, which is intrinsically a quadruple license. So it's the MPL, it's the Afro GPL, it's the GPL, and it's the LGPL, and effectively a v3 and onwards. So it's quite a good license like that. So we have permissions from everyone except for something like 0.5% of our commits. So I forget how many commits we've had. The numbers are on the laptop somewhere. So there's a few more that remain. And so we're going to do an incremental rebase on their code, as in reapplying our code changes on top of theirs on a file-by-file basis. The reality is that if you look at the Apache code base, they've done some quite focused work to remove GPL code or lesser GPL code because they don't like it, which is a shame. But that code actually only touches something like 6% of the code base. So all of the rest of the code base, the 94%, the only change to those files is the header changing. So an Oracle guy came along, changed the header, wandered on. And so Andrew Rist is a hero because he's committed 1 million lines of header change. That's quite a lot of lines of header change to do. You would hope he had a script, but given that he did it in relatively small blocks, I don't know. Anyway, so most of that code is effectively untouched since where we're at. So I don't know if that answered the question. I've forgotten what the question was. The Symfony features. So the prerequisite is getting the licensing sorted out, and that's going very well. So we hope to have some great progress there for 3.6. After that, it's then necessary to look at the Symfony code. So the Symfony code has been checked into a branch in Apache Subversion, and the Symfony code is interestingly not based on the Apache OpenOffice release. So there's loads of files, you know, and just what's the scale? The number of files is really quite staggering. Let me dig out my statistics. So where are we? Yeah, so 39,000 commits we've had to look through to get that working. I forget the file count. It's really quite substantial. So we have to. What am I doing? Not much. Let's try back here. It's probably safer. So we have to get all of those files re-licensed, and then, we have to look at the Symfony code and see what's actually there. And it's very hard to tell, given that there's just a single check-in. There's no revision history there at all. And it's a check-in against a branch that we don't have. So you can't diff it to see what they changed. It's just very different, which is a shame. It would be nice if it had been rebased onto the Apache thing. And so hopefully that work will happen inside the Apache project, and the IBM guys will do that, because they actually have the code to be able to do the rebase, because that information is actually not public. That's inside IBM. They wanted to give a single dump. So yeah, you have a mix of OpenOffice 3.1 code, and of course Apache OpenOffice was based on OpenOffice 3.3, and there's a year of development in between. So it's an interesting story. I don't know what the answer is, but here's the thing. Once they've sorted their licensing situation out, which is also not clear at the moment, many of the files contain an IBM proprietary and confidential header, you know, which is pretty scary in itself. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's once that's sorted out, then, yeah, certainly. I mean, we consider importing anything that the UI team think is good and that's reasonably stable, and, yeah, why not? Excellent, you know. We take good code that's suitably licensed from wherever it comes. And, you know, if you look back at our commit stats graph, we're eager to credit the people who did the work, too. You know, Oracle is there. You know, there's a great chunk of the Oracle work before it disappeared. And we love to do that. So, yeah, all of that code is welcome, as long as it's good and clean and works and suitably licensed. So, yeah, it's exciting, huh? I mean, actually, I was quite excited about it when it all happened. And then I started to see some of these problems, which made me a bit less excited. And then I started to look at some of the things that have been duplicated by us. So, you know, there's a whole pivot table, something or other. Well, guess what we did? You know, so it's a bit of some missed opportunities there and duplication of work, which is sad. But, you know, there are some good things. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an earth-shaking. For 6 years of work behind closed doors, I was hoping for more. But anyway, we'll see. Hopefully it'll be all unwound and everything will be good in the end. Was that unbelievably nasty? Or was that? I hope that's helpful. Thank you.
I think good. We have no more time for questions.
Oh, brilliant. Excellent. I talked out of time.
Thorsten's talk will start.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your talk.